Welcome to our short story series, A Walk in the Dark. I am your host, Ray Hedden. Today's tale is entitled, The Sportsman. Jim Brady was a popular civic leader, candidate for mayor, and an avid sportsman. His wife, unfortunately, was not an enthusiastic supporter. Here is the roundabout ending to this ghastly tale.
Police Chief Harold Green was inwardly excited, though he tried not to show it. It had been years since he and his force, the entire city for that matter, had had such excitement. 7 years since the big fuss stirred up over the McGuire case, in which two student nurses were found stabbed to death near the Bluffton University campus. It took him and his men exactly 3 days to track the killer. Chief Green had spearheaded a group of officers who broke their way into John McGuire's motel room, and it was Green's gun which finally put McGuire down after two officers had been critically wounded in the fierce gunplay. He could still see the quizzical look on McGuire's face as the bullet penetrated his heart. The newspapers had a field day, and he found himself one of the biggest celebrities of the year, but that was 7 years ago. And nothing of much consequence had happened since, until now. He'd been home watching television late in the evening when the call came from Patrolman Roger Bush.
Chief, Roger.
Yes, Roger.
There have been some fireworks over at the Jim Brady place.
Just what do you mean by fireworks, Roger?
Brady's dead. Lost his head.
What the hell are you talking about?
I'm serious, Chief. Jim Brady's dead.
There was an awkward pause, as neither party seemed capable of words. To Green, it seemed impossible. He knew Jim Brady fairly well. In fact, they'd played golf together several weeks ago. Everyone called him Pro because he loved so many different sports and had played many very well over the years. He'd also run a nearly successful campaign for mayor 2 years ago and had a large following of fans at the polls, as well as on the golf course.
Who did it?
Everything points to the wife, but she was incoherent and half crazy when we got here. The doctor gave her a sedative, so we'll get nothing out of her until morning.
Who called the police?
She did, about 40 minutes ago.
40 minutes? What the hell took you so long to call me?
Your line's been tied up, Chief.
Green snorted in disgust as he remembered his teenage son on the upstairs extension, once again violating the five-minute rule, which Green had set up weeks ago.
Did you find the weapon?
Ready for this, Chief? An electric carving knife. A clean cut all the way. Bloodiest mess I've ever seen.
On my way.
Chief, one thing is, one item is missing. We searched the house, the grounds, the whole place. We cannot find the damned head.
Green couldn't reply. He merely stood, stupidly staring at the receiver before hanging up. The Brady home was neatly tucked away behind a thick grove of elm and willow trees in the exclusive Benton Hills edition. When Green arrived, he found the huge wrought iron gate had been propped open by a squad car, sitting just inside with its lights flashing. He blinked his lights and gave a wave as he slowly passed by. The two-story, $2 million-plus house was ablaze with lights, with two squad cars lined up in front of the huge red double doors. Green stepped from his car just as Sergeant Cody came out of the front door.
Hi, Chief. Quite a mess in there.
Mrs. Brady still here?
She's sleeping.
Green brushed by Cody and entered the thickly carpeted home of James Eugene Brady. He paused at the base of the curved stairway, which led to the upper rooms, and glanced at the expensive chandelier which Brady at one time had described as being a damned expensive nuisance to clean. Cody followed Green into the formal dining room.
Where is he?
Kitchen. We were waiting for you before we removed it.
Green could tell by the bewildered expression on Cody's face that she had seen something incomprehensible.
Did they find it yet?
No, sir. We've been all over the house and grounds.
Now what about the garage?
Nothing there, sir.
She say anything?
No, sir. She was mostly incoherent.
Green shook his head and crossed the dining area to the kitchen. He could hear muffled voices within, which stopped abruptly when he entered. His gaze fell upon the bulging white sheet, its edges saturated with crimson. Kitchen towels were tucked around to absorb the excessive blood. By its shape, he could tell that the feet were nearest him, and it was readily apparent that something was missing at the other end. A dripping faucet drew his attention to the sink, where he noticed the possible murder weapon sitting on the countertop, a white-handled electric carving knife still plugged into the wall via a long extension cord. Beside it laid a red-spotted dishcloth, evidently used to wipe clean the blades. Green took a deep breath. The motive for Mrs. Brady's, or whoever's, apparent action did not concern him at the moment. His only concern was the absence of the missing body part. He slowly looked about the room. He was alone now, with the exception of one officer who was looking out the screen door leading to Brady's spacious backyard, which housed a swimming pool, tennis court, and garage. The kitchen was immaculate, except for the incongruous red and white lump on the floor. Suddenly, he felt a chill as he focused on the oven door to his left. An indistinct shape inside, dark and rounded, caught his attention. He moved slowly toward it, removed the handkerchief from his back pocket, and carefully placed it on the oven door handle, and pulled. Warm air gushed out, and the sweet fragrance of a baked ham greeted his nostrils. He breathed again.
That's what I thought, too. I was scared to death when I opened that thing.
Green closed the oven door, then surveyed the rest of the room.
What did Mrs. Brady say on the phone?
The desk sergeant said she identified herself and simply stated that she had killed her husband because he no longer paid any attention to her.
Green could easily believe this, as Brady had been involved in all kinds of sporting activities and was seldom home. He also had heard of Mrs. Brady's condition of mental imbalance. He sensed this the first time he had met her. There was a certain look about her, her eyes, a sort of stare that reflected abnormality, a cold, blank stare.
Could she have driven it anyplace?
Not likely, Chief. The car engines were all cold, and the body was very warm when we got here.
There was particular emphasis on the word very. Green turned once more to look at the thing on the floor, then excused himself and stepped toward the back door. The screen door banged alarmingly behind him as he crossed the huge patio, his hands buried deep in his pockets as he tried to stabilize his thoughts. He could accept the reason for her killing her husband, but where could she have taken the head? And why? The yellow bug lights along the back of the patio shed very little light on the grounds, and the lights on the garage and those surrounding the pool were too directional to illuminate the entire area. Yet he could make out the limp flag atop the pole, protruding from the hole on Brady's putting green, and further back the white webbing of the tennis net. Yes, he thought, there was no doubting that Jim Brady loved sports. Green strolled across the recently trimmed grass and disgustedly took a swing at the tetherball, his fist crunching into a hard mass, sending it around and around the pole. His search was over.
The Sportsman was written and directed by Bob Barry. The cast included Larry Adams, Bob Barry, Patrick Crawley, and Erica Edelberg. Original theme music by Brian Wheat. Produced at Village Recording Studio, Indianapolis, Indiana. I am your host, Ray Hedden. Join us next time for a new episode of A Walk in the Dark.